Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing with me, Paul Stevenson. I'm glad to be with you. I do support Republic Broadcasting Network. If you go to the homepage, you'll find the various donation options there. That's Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. And you can scroll through the various options to donate to us. We do need to get those donations to keep us on air and to keep the real truth getting out there as best we can, and free speech and all that. So please go there and support us. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. Patrick, welcome to the show today.
Glorious day. It is a glorious day. Hey, do you know the song, It's a Great Day for the Irish?
No, I don't.
Well, it's a great day for me.
What's so great about it?
It's just beautiful day.
Beautiful, yeah, well, it is here as well.
I got the day off. I am out doing things. It is a beautiful day.
Makes you feel glad you're alive.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because what's the alternative?
Yeah, exactly. All right, Patrick. We were talking recently about Matteo Salvini and Italy and immigration and into Italy and Europe from Africa, and like I said, if the lights go out in a village in Africa, or someone sneezes and has a cold in Africa, we have the next flood of so-called refugees from Africa flooding into Europe. And if I can just pull up the article or read some of this, which sort of illuminates some of the landscape that we find ourselves in here in Europe at the minute, which does involve Italy, Germany, and comments from Salvini, where we had a development, I think only yesterday or today, where Germany refuses to take any more EU migrants as boats forced to queue in Italy. And you know, the thing is, when you look at the geography of Europe, it's like Italy is in an unfortunate position because of its southern border, where it's often the first landing spot. In fact, there's a really, really beautiful, well, there was, I can't imagine it's too beautiful right now, a little island down there. What's the name of it? Lapperdusa, it's a strange little name. It'll probably mention this article, Lapperdusa or something, where that's their first sort of landing spot. And from there, they make their way to Italy and up through Europe and up through Germany, and obviously up into Calais and then across the English Channel to the UK. But Germany says, quote, no more migrants. And so Berlin has backed out of the EU resettlement plan and says it will no longer accept arrivals from Italy, in a major blow to European unity. Germany will no longer accept refugees from Italy. And of course, you know, it must be understood, these are not refugees from Italy. These are refugees from Africa that Italy has been burdened with. And they're backing out from a European solidarity initiative over perceptions Rome has failed to meet its obligations to take back migrants under an EU resettlement plan. Berlin had voluntarily pledged to help the overwhelmed EU states by taking in 3,500 migrants, an Interior Ministry spokesperson said on Wednesday. So far, it has accepted more than 1,700 under the scheme launched last June. But arguing that Italy had, quote, for some time, unquote, stopped receiving migrants returned from Germany under the Dublin regulations, it announced it would postpone until further notice its offer to support in a blow to European solidarity. Under the Dublin regulations, migrants are supposed to stay in the EU country they reach first and return to their first point of entry if they move on to another. Now, I've never really understood the logic of that, because, I mean, first of all, it never happens. I mean, if this law is to be adhered to, we shouldn't have any migrants in the UK. So, you know, because it's basically, well, you reach the first point of safety, the EU country you reach first, and that's it, basically. And it says, so under the Dublin regulations, migrants are supposed to stay in the EU country they reach first and are returned to their first point of entry if they move on to another. Now, obviously, apart from the fact this never happens, the other, you know, injustice in all of this is, you know, Italy can't help its geography, because otherwise you're not going to have Italy anymore. You're going to have Africa, if that's the case. Because you would have every African and other Middle Eastern migrants, Syrians and all the rest of it, who have made their way from the first port of entry, it may be in southern Spain or Greece, which is a tremendous burden with these people, and the Italians, then you would have basically those countries' demographics would be completely overwhelmed by Africans, because at the minute, at least, they're sort of spread out over Europe. Anyway, the spokesman for Berlin said yesterday, this applies to over 12,400 people, but only 10 have been relocated to Italy so far. They added, given the currently high migratory pressure of Germany, the ongoing suspension of the Dublin transfers by some member states, including Italy, reinforces the major challenges Germany is currently facing in terms of its reception and accommodation capacity. Europe is currently facing record crossings, up 13% on the year, with Italy among the countries most affected. More than 123,800 irregular migrants and asylum seekers have arrived in Italy this year, including more than 8,000 this week. 8,000 in a week, Patrick, you know. The climbing figures are a key issue for Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, who took the job last year, promising a hard stance on migrant arrivals. Some 120 boats of 6,800 migrants arrived on the shores of, this is the island I was talking about, Lampedusa, in a 24-hour period starting early Tuesday, seeking refuge in Europe. The figure is a few hundred higher than the island's full-time population. When the Coast Guard tried to assist one boat early Wednesday, the smuggler's vessel tipped over, and a mother with her five-month-old baby fell into the sea, Italian RIA State TV said, reporting from Lampedusa. I don't know whether that's a left-leaning media outlet in Italy. It wouldn't surprise me. It's the type of stories that they like to report, that, you know, there's a mother and a five-year-old baby fell into the sea. I would question whether that actually happened or whether there's any footage of that. It's very rare you see any women or children in these boats. They're all young males. The woman, although this one article says, who is from Guinea, was rescued in shock, but the baby died, RIA said. Okay, looks like it is true. According to the Interior Ministry, by early Wednesday morning, nearly 124,000 migrants have reached Italy by sea this year, roughly double the number by the same time last year. And okay, this story seems to be true, where it's a woman and the tragedy of her young baby dying. But the vast majority, if you look at these, are like 95% plus young men of fighting age. So Salvini, by the way, he leads the Anti-Migrant League, which is a part of the coalition with Meloni. So Meloni's in a coalition government. And Salvini would be, in my opinion, more of a serious guy and serious about really controlling the borders, whereas Meloni I don't trust. He said in an article I read in The Telegraph, just briefly, he said, I'm convinced that more or less, I'm paraphrasing, but he said he was convinced that there's a plan behind this, that this migration is not by accident and is basically designed to destabilize and undermine the Italian state, which is what he said. He didn't say who he thought was who was conducting this plan, but that was his thinking. But he stopped short of identifying who he thought was behind this flood of migrants from Africa into Italy. So that's some of the article anyway, Patrick, but you can get some thoughts on that from, it elaborates on some of the things we were talking about yesterday.
Well, it seems obvious. And I think Salvini was in charge of migration for Italy as the, I believe it was the interior minister in a previous government, and did have a positive effect. I think he has a different attitude from Meloni. But, you know, who could it possibly be that would be behind it? And, I, like, I think he understands very well that it's Jewish power. Maybe he will say it. Maybe he will help get this out there. Because, but on the other hand, you know, I was talking to somebody who should know better, somebody in America who's very anti-immigration, who thinks that Russia and China are behind it in America. Russia and China are trying to undermine America. Oh, by the way, Russia and China, they are behind Black Lives Matter. Yeah, matter. You know what the evidence is? On Black Lives Matter posters, they use a symbol of a clenched fist. And that clenched fist comes from the Bolshevik Revolution. That's where it comes from.
That's settled then.
It's settled. Yeah. Open and shut.
Mm. Okay. So, yeah, Salvini would, I would imagine, probably knows fine well who's responsible. And unlike your friend who's frustrated by immigration, is more than aware that it's not the Chinese or Vladimir Putin who gets blamed for everything. And of course, not only do the Jews, it's so typical of them to distract from themselves, but they then point the finger at those they are already hostile to. And currently, that very much is Putin, it very much is China, because it's a threat to their global hegemony and their global financial system and the dollar and all of that. Post-world construct that they erected, post-World War II construct that they erected. And so, you know, and also, of course, this will garner further hostility among the American people for Vladimir Putin and China, should they want to continue escalating these hostilities towards China and Russia. All the while, you know, as I say, garnering some support for it from the American electorate. Not that I think they actually care that much about them, but I guess if they can get it, they would prefer to have it than not, you know.
You know, if they can have the public on their side, that's a plus. It isn't necessary at the same time to have the public up in arms. That's a problem. And you know, the level of migration is just going off the charts.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, how long can it possibly go? Like, you will have, like, a lot of women who are saying they just want a better life. You'll have a fair amount of that.
They're just people like you and me.
They're people like you and me. And then you'll have, like, maybe slightly more intellectual people who will say, well, if you look at the data, by the third generation, they're totally assimilated. It's third generation, which is like, you know, 70 years from now, we could cross our fingers and hope that they will be assimilated by the time our grandchildren are grown up or something. But by the time we're long gone, hopefully they'll be assimilated.
That's with the assumption that that's what the European people want. They want to assimilate, half of Africa into Europe, you know. who said we wanted that? Who said we wanted half of Africa to come here, even if they assimilated as soon as they arrived?
And of course, the American blacks have been here for as long as the whites, and they're not assimilated. And
not all of them, anyway. By a long shot.
Not very many of them. Not very many of them.
You know, you could see when I spoke to you last, you could see that kind of behavior among the blacks when they got here. I mean, they were in large groups together. When you have any group like that in large numbers, particularly if they're, you know, foreign to the nation, it looks hostile. Whether that's an intention or not, I don't know. But then you go into the, you know, what and who you're importing. I mean, you're importing a dependent people. You're importing a people who are going to be very costly, but to your housing system, they need to be housed for the welfare, and it needs to be paid for by large percentage of these people by the judicial system, that the amount of money and time that the judiciary and the courts have to spend on these people because of their pension for crime, and then of course the prisons, all of it. I mean, what exactly is the benefit, you know, is to import these people? Obviously that's a rhetorical question. We know some of the liberal arguments towards these things, but they don't hold water. So yeah, like you said, it's, you know, the numbers are staggering. They just keep coming. Salvini reckons there's a conspiracy more or less behind this, without naming it. And then people like your friend and, you know, others who are frustrated like to blame China and Russia, you know. So,
so Spain has these two enclaves in what would otherwise be Morocco.
The
north coast of Africa. One's called Ceuta. I've been there. There's another one. I can't remember what it's called. And there's, I don't know how often this happens, but there is video of sub-Saharan Africans who make their way through Morocco. They're obviously not Moroccans. And they get to Ceuta where there's a border fence, a tall border fence. And they're climbing over it. And it, you know, you see videos like that, they're trying to climb over, the police are trying to repel them, they're trying to push past the police, and it looks like an invasion. You know, the thing about the crossing in the boats, you see them in these little dinghies, and the dinghies themselves, the vessels they're in are unimposing, they're not really seaworthy, and so the even the military-aged men still look pathetic. Even these young men who could do a lot of damage, in a street fight or whatever, and probably will do a lot of damage sooner or later, they look pathetic. They don't look so threatening. But when you see them trying to cross this land border into Ceuta, they look like an invasion force. And I guess also if you see them in the park and in Italy or in London or in Paris. I mean, you see them in their encampments in Paris. They certainly look threatening. And by the way, in Israel, you had small groups of Eritreans fighting each other in Israel. And Netanyahu is saying, well, we're deporting all the Africans now, and we're building a wall against, you know, on the border with the Sinai Peninsula, because we're not letting these Africans in, and we're going to expel them all, not just the Eritreans, not just the ones who are riding, but all Africans. I don't think there are very many Africans there, and I bet they're going to expel them to Europe and not to Africa. But
no doubt, there's plenty of Israeli NGOs who have been exposed for bringing these people across into Europe and Greece and giving them all sorts of information about things, what to say, and little pamphlets about how to get benefits and everything else. And make sure you say, we're anti-racism and all the usual, you know, type of things that they would say to trigger liberal Western ears. I'm sure there's probably not the kind of numbers that are coming into Europe, to put it mildly, in Israel, but that would be sufficient for them.
Something much wiser than me is screaming out. And it's so much bigger than me, it's screaming out.
Liberal Western ears. Yeah, I'm sure there's probably quite a, there's probably not the kind of numbers that are coming into Europe, to put it mildly, in Israel, but that would be sufficient for them to build a wall. And like you said, they won't be sending them back to Africa. They'll be, you know, sending them to Europe if they're going to bother sending them anywhere. But, you know, I'm sure their priority is, as long as they're not in Israel, they don't care that much. But like I said, there is evidence and plenty of it for Israeli NGO type organizations bringing them across to Europe and facilitating migration from Israel into Europe, you know.
So it seems like we're on the cusp of perhaps an actual conversation about certain aspects of Jewish power that have been taboo to discuss. So Salvini talking about the immigration and saying that this, it seems as if somebody is trying to undermine Italy. Well, it begs the question, who? And I'm sure he's going to be asked. And you never know. You might have Jewish groups just attacking him for being anti-Semitic, even though he doesn't drop the name. They do this sometimes. You know, people will.
Yeah, of course.
People will say things. You know, they might talk about George Soros, and then they're accused of anti-Semitism, which just draws attention to the fact that George Soros. You know, they'll do things.
Or
like
they might, they might not even name the mention of a Jewish thing. They might just have to say, you know, those who are responsible for controlling, you know, the banking system, the media, and Hollywood, and that usually brings them out.
Yeah. And you know, because they can't help themselves. And then, of course, in I would say in America, but in the Twitter sphere, in the tubes of the internet, you've got Elon Musk, who is in a battle right now with the Anti-Defamation League, right? And the Anti-Defamation League, which because Twitter was not cracking down hard enough on hate speech, they organized a kind of informal boycott, an advertiser boycott of Twitter, which has caused a massive decline in Twitter's revenue and in its share price. And so now Elon Musk, I don't know if he's serious about this, but he's saying that he should sue Twitter for he should sue the ADL for $20 billion because that's the damage that's been done to Twitter's market capitalization. He's talking like this. Ban the ADL was trending on Twitter last week. And Elon Musk, what he does that's very interesting is, for instance, 9/11 was earlier this week. Somebody, who was it? Somebody named Paul Hill, or not Paul Hill. Somebody had tweeted out the link to a video about dancing Israelis, you know, Israeli connection to 9/11. And Elon Musk just responds to it with like one word, wow, or interesting, or this type of thing. But just by responding to it means everybody that follows Elon Musk on Twitter, which is tens of millions of people, now they have that in their Twitter feed, a link to a video about Israeli connections to 9/11. And so he's getting really, really close. And how close can you get without having, like, at some point getting challenged or called out, and then it starts? So I don't know. Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, but it seems like we've gotten really, really, really close to an open discussion. Last autumn, I kept talking about Kanye West, who was talking openly. He got smashed down, and he got shut up. But it did, you know, it got some of the blacks talking about it. Now we're getting really close. And at that time, I kept saying, well, where's Elon Musk? Where's Tucker Carlson? Where's Donald Trump? They're not talking about it. But now you've got Elon Musk on the cusp of talking about it. And you've got Donald Trump being he's been arrested four times. And clearly who's behind this. So it could happen. I don't know if it will or not, but if it does happen, and then of course you've got the whole, I know we're always talking about Ukraine, but they, how much longer can this, the total collapse of Ukraine be staved off, and the Jewish role in Ukraine. So.
Yeah. But that's very interesting about the ADL, because, you know, first of all, that would have to be recognized by Musk, you know, as a Jewish organization. And then you see, you would identify the power of them and the aggression of them, where even though he owns Twitter now, or X as it's called, that they should be throwing their weight around, attempting to influence the content on there. And then, of course, when you see that that organization is so hell-bent on suppressing free speech and suppressing certain ideas and concepts, that also, you know, incriminates themselves and exposes themselves. And all of this, of course, the vast majority of this suppression of free speech is designed to lock up, you know, and to basically control.
You look around, you see the places come and go before you.
know, incriminates themselves and exposes themselves. And all of this, of course, the vast majority of this suppression of free speech is designed to lock up, and to basically control any narrative that might expose Jews. That is 95% of it. They don't care about black people, gay people, any of it. This is all just a big smokescreen where Jews can fit into this little minority category where those rules apply to them. It's the same with immigration. You know, they feel more comfortable in a multicultural society as apparently one other minority group, and they muddy the waters. But the vast majority of the sort of legislation, again, all this what people call woke, and censorship and deplatforming and all the rest of it is designed to silence and to intimidate and terrorize anyone who dares mention that there might be a Jewish conspiracy afoot here, you know? And Patrick, it will come out in the end. It's just that they've had so much success this particular time around since World War II that they've sewn up the institutions. But, you know, things like that where the ADL pick on someone like Musk, you know, or like the banks over here closing the bank account of Nigel Farage, eventually they pick on the wrong type of people with deep pockets and high profiles, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then it causes them a problem.
The point I try to make, I've been talking to a lot of people, in Americans, in foreigners, people who are work in the Pentagon, people who are, high up in foreign governments, and I'm just amazed at the lack of understanding. And I mentioned earlier in the show, talking to somebody who works in the Pentagon, thinks that Ukraine's winning the war. And he's a contractor in the Pentagon, a former colonel. And, you know, people who listen to RBN tend to think, they tend to gravitate towards this idea that there's some giant plan, giant conspiracy, and everybody's part of it. And honestly, a lot of it, you know, is people are ignorant, they're stupid, they're not connecting the dots. You would think that these people would have to be in on some sort of plot. I guarantee you that I talked to lots of people that you would think would have to be part of the plan, and they don't know what's going on. And then on the other hand, the flip side of that is the Jews, okay? So are the Jews some monolith? No, the Jews, Victoria Nuland doesn't need instructions from Jew Central to try to overthrow Vladimir Putin. And Jonathan Greenblatt doesn't need instructions from Jew Central to do what he's doing to Twitter. And what is he doing to Twitter and to Elon Musk? He's going too far. And they do this. They go too far. If they were centrally organized and had this central decision making and governing structure, they would learn from their mistakes. But they don't have. They're not centrally organized. And therefore, they don't learn. They repeat mistakes over and over and over again. They go too far over and over and over again, and they're going too far now.
I've always said that, you know, their greatest undoing is, you know, is their aggression, and you could throw paranoia in there. That's always their undoing. They eventually raise eyebrows. I mean, these people have no restraint, you know. They don't know when to stop. I mean, any sensible people would think, you know, they'd look around and they'd think, look how much power we've got. I mean, what else do we actually need to control here? I mean, do we really need to keep pushing this and ending up like shooting ourselves in the foot and blowing up the whole building that we live in? But that's what they do. It's in their nature. They don't know how to stop. They only know one gear. They're a mad dog. You know, if you have a dog that's out of control, you can try everything with it. But eventually, Patrick, there's only one thing you can do with that dog.
Okay, well, I don't have a mad dog, and so I'm not even going to think about that. But regarding, you mentioned the word paranoia, and I think that is the key operational term here, paranoia. A lot of people say they do this because they're evil. And I say, no, they don't. They're not evil. even Victoria Nuland, I don't think she's evil. I think she's paranoid. I think they do this out of paranoid. I think they've drunk their own Kool-Aid, you know, whether it's the Holocaust or the pogroms or whatever it is, they think that they're always just, you know, one anti-Semitic trope away from another Holocaust, and so they've got to shut it down. They're paranoid. And the thing is, if you have a lot of dealings with individual Jews, they're not horrible people to deal with. They're not nasty people to deal with, for the most part. Sometimes you run into somebody in business affairs who's pretty nasty, or in legal affairs who's pretty nasty. But in general, they're not nasty people. People would be shocked, and I'm not saying this so in order to be to try to say I'm not an anti-Semite or whatever. But people would be so. I've got tons of Jewish friends who are perfectly nice people, and I think that's typical. They do have a streak of paranoia, but on a one-to-one basis, that streak of paranoia. Do they think that maybe someday I could be swept away in the National Socialist movement? Maybe they do think I could be, but they don't think I'm going to be swept away in like the next 5 or 10 minutes of our business dealings. So they're perfectly nice to get along with. And I think part, like, the people who aren't red-pilled, this is part of the problem that they have. Like, I think the people who are red-pilled often think that the Jews are motivated by evil, and they've got this cartoonish idea of what Jews are like. The people who aren't red-pilled often know Jewish people, have Jewish friends, and they think, no, there's no way that they could be trying to undermine society by importing African migrants. There's no way that they're trying to control the world. There's no way that they started. But
yeah. But you can point out, for example, people like Barbara Roche, who was the immigration secretary under Tony Blair, who had a complete open door policy, who openly said that she feels more comfortable in a multicultural society.
Yes. So you'll see that. You'll see Brett Stevens, who is a columnist at the New York Times. He's in his late 40s. And he's I saw him at some forum. It was a Jewish forum, and he was being interviewed by some other Jew in front of a Jewish audience, and this was being broadcast on the internet, so it's not a secret, and he was saying exactly that. He said, Jews thrive where there's liberalism. We thrive where there's liberalism. But you see, they say this, they've drunken Kool-Aid. They don't think they're doing anything bad. They don't think that, or at least, when I say they don't think it, maybe deep down they know that this is bad for some people, but they do think it's good for the Jews, and to the extent that they have any awareness that this is actually bad for society, they have this ideology how liberalism is good for everybody, and they have this way of thinking that. We're doing white people a favor by saving them from Nazism, by saving them from themselves. We're saving them from themselves.
Well, also, they have,
sure, they can't be Nazis.
Yeah, they have this self-delusionary idea of, I think it's called Tikkai Olam or something, save the world, yeah. Basically, that the world would be in peril if it wasn't for the Jews. This is the level of self-delusion where, far from them walking around, for the most part, I mean, I think there are Jews who know fine well, who are very sinister people. I think Victoria Nuland would fit that category. But even if she didn't, if these people think that by getting rid of Vladimir Putin and starting World War III, these people are quite capable and have been capable historically of convincing themselves, no matter what they do, it's for the good, not only of the Jew, which is what they really are interested in, obviously. But I think they go beyond that. Like you said, to convince themselves that far from destroying our societies and maybe causing wars left, right, and center, that they're actually doing us all a favor. They're ridding the world of Hitler. They're ridding the world of Vladimir Putin. They're ridding the world of racism. They're ridding the world of bigotry. These people convince themselves of these things a lot of the time. You know, this is that doctrine they have of I think it's called Tikka Olam. I can't remember how to pronounce it, but it roughly translates to save the world.
Right, right. And I don't speak Hebrew, but I think it's Tikkun Olam. Tikkun is one word.
Alum. That's the one.
Yes.
That's the one.
And, you know, there's a they have an organization by that name, a peace organization. And I remember 20 years ago, I was going through these anti-Iraq war, anti-war demonstrations, and the Tikkun Olam people would show up. And the Tikkun Olam people could even be critical of Israel's role in what was going on. They could be critical in that. But, you know, at the end of the day, so the thing is, they do have this self-delusion. They have various ideologies and various narratives and explanations for why what they're doing is good for everybody. It's good for the world. It's even good for the goyim, like the whites, because it's saving them from themselves so they don't become Nazis or white supremacists. But, you know, you and I or other people can look at their arguments and see massive holes, massive weaknesses. But the fact of the matter is, they're never challenged on them, because to be Jewish is to never have to say you're sorry. To be Jewish is to never have to debate your position. You don't have to. I mean, you can't talk about the Holocaust. You don't have to debate the Holocaust. You don't have to debate anything that happened, because as soon as somebody starts being critical of Jews, they get shut down. So they're never challenged on their beliefs.
And of course, depending on the audience, they can take credit for these things. You know, I mean, I've heard Jews at rallies taking credit for mass immigration into Europe. But that's because they're talking to a pro-immigration crowd. But then if you get people like us who don't appreciate their role in mass immigration, well, we get called Jewish conspiracy theorists. Suddenly they deny it, and all the linguistic weapons and organizations are brought out against us for things that they've openly admitted, but they've openly admitted it to a crowd who are warmly receiving this information. But if you don't warmly receive the information, well, then you're an anti-Semite, and you're pushing these anti-Jewish conspiracy theorist tropes. So, I mean, what do you do? So much power, and they're so organized that it's almost impossible to do anything unless you get people like Elon Musk and you get people like Donald Trump and some of these major figures to say, look, these are the people who's doing it. For whatever reason they're doing it, out of hatred, out of self-delusion or whatever, they need to have some constraints or restraints put on them, because they're wrecking society, you know?
Right. Well, okay, so they can, you know, we can say things and we can get shut down or we can get marginalized. But if you've got Elon Musk or Matteo Salvini, that gets harder. It gets harder to marginalize them. It gets harder to shut them down. Donald Trump, they're trying their best to shut him down. Now, I don't know if Donald Trump is going to talk about Jewish power. He has been so punished, so abused by Jews.
He's got too many family members. All his daughters and his children are all married to Jews. I mean, of his business were actually.
His daughter is. So he's got five kids. The youngest is still a teenager, so he's not married. Then he's got Tiffany that he's not particularly close with. I don't know what's going on with her. I don't think she's married to a Jew. The problem was what's her name? Ivanka. That was the problem, because she brought her Jewish husband into the White House, and they were there in the White House and ensconced. Second boy, what's his name? I forgot his name, but the middle of son of his, I don't know if he's married to a Jew or not. I'm not sure.
I think Jr. he is.
Donald Jr. is is divorced and he's shacked up with some older Puerto Rican lady who is the ex-wife. Now, this I don't know if you're aware of this. Donald Jr. is shacked up with the ex-wife of California Governor Gavin Newsom. It's a weird situation.
You couldn't make it up, mate. You couldn't make it up. Listen, I wanted to see if we've got time. I wanted to change the topic just quickly over to the other Jew over there in Ukraine. Well, not him, but we've had, let's just say, the Ukrainians displaying their ability and knack for charm and diplomatic etiquette at it again. Or I guess this is motivated by anger at the Indians and Modi for the G20 situation, probably particularly where very cleverly and diplomatically Modi described the war over there as a war in Ukraine and not a war against Ukraine. So while not necessarily saying that Russia aren't, you know, haven't invaded, it leaves it rather more ambiguous by to say there's a war in Ukraine, not a war against Ukraine, which, of course, heavily implies that Russia invaded this in this unprovoked attack. But anyway, then this guy, Mikolai, what's his name, Podolyak, if I'm pronouncing that right, he's a Zelensky spokesperson and advisor. He said that if you ask me, the problems with the Indians and the Chinese is that they have weak intellectual potential. He said, unfortunately, these two nations have weak intellectual potential, and went on to claim that the problem with them is they are unable to analyze the impact of their stance on the war. But that wasn't enough. He went on to mock and insult India's lunar mission, saying India, and this is, I quote, India might have landed on the moon, but they can't grasp things about the modern world. Unfortunately, these two nations, and he's talking about China, have weak intellectual potential. Yes, they invest in science. Yes, India has landed a lunar rover presently and is now trekking on the surface of the moon. But that does not indicate that this country fully comprehends. Unfortunately, these two nations, and he's talking about China, have weak intellectual potential. Yes, they invest in science. Yes, India has landed a lunar rover presently and is now trekking on the surface of the moon. But that does not indicate that this country fully comprehends what the modern world is about. The Indians haven't commented on this. The Chinese, apparently, Xi Jinping has asked him to elaborate and for an explanation as to exactly what he means. I mean, I don't even know what he really means by saying this country doesn't, this would indicate or doesn't, you know, does not indicate that the country fully comprehends what the modern world is about. But, you know, that's the type of thing, if I said something like that about Indians, or anyone in the West said that about Indians or blacks or anything else, you know what the cries are going to be. But the Ukrainians, as I say, these guys increasingly show a complete lack of filter.
And I'm not familiar with this spokesman. I wonder if he is Jewish, and if this is just kind of, you know.
Well, I wonder, is he aware of just how many? I wonder, is he aware of just how many Indians you have in the UK, which has been, you know, unrelenting in our support for Ukraine.
Speaking of Indians in the UK, did you notice that Modi did not receive Rishi Sunak at his own residence? It was kind of, I guess it was kind of a snub that he, when he met him somewhere like less official. I'm not sure of the details, but it's kind of interesting that you get this Indian Prime Minister of Britain come over and he gets snubbed by the Indian Prime Minister of India. It's put in his place.
Well, that little scumbag upstart in Canada got something similar as well. There was, I think he didn't get an official pamphlet which welcomed all the other guests. I think he was left without one of those. So there was little subtle, but if you know how diplomacy works, then there are little rebukes going all over the place from Modi.
Well, I think we're nearing the end of our time.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Patrick, for coming on. And, I'm sure hopefully we'll do it again soon.
We sure will. Yeah, I'll do it.
I'll be back in the UK next week. Everybody was kung fu. They fought with